Imagine not being able to see color, your vision void of blue or green, red or yellow, that all you could see was shades of gray. Or what if you couldn't see something until you heard the object make a sound or touched it? Those are two different examples of a condition called blind sight. It's The Record. I'm Steve Scherr. Blind sight is rare, very rare. In fact, you probably don't know anyone that knows anyone that has it. So who does get it and why does it happen? A question we put to Dr. Christoph Koch, Chief Scientific Officer for the Allen Institute for Brain Science in Seattle, author of the book, The Quest for Consciousness, A Neurobiological Approach. Good to talk to you again, sir.
Thanks for having me, Steve.
We were just curious because just the idea of blind sight is such an odd conundrum. You have a chapter in your book, Agnosia, Blind Sight, Epilepsy, Sleepwalking, Clinical Evidence for Zombies, which I guess you're going to explain to me. But what is blind sight?
So blind sight is this paradoxical term. You know, when you're blind, how can you see? It's a different set of clinical conditions in patients that lack particular visual abilities. They don't see certain, either they don't see at all anymore or they don't see color, as you alluded in your introductory example, yet they still have access to some of that information. So classical blind sight person may be unable to see anything, yet to his surprise, he can still navigate a hallway. He can still, if you give him this pencil, he says, well, I don't see it, but he can still more or less correctly grasp it and can distinguish from horizontal or from, can shape his hand accordingly, whether it's oriented horizontally or vertically. What it reveals to us as visual scientists is that that vision is not this homogeneous process. So we think, I open my eyes and I see you instantly within a fraction of a second. And I see, so that's what vision is. But it turns out there's a myriad of processes that go on in your brain, only some of which give rise to conscious vision, the one where we actually see a picture in my head. There are other aspects of the visual system that go on sub rosa, that go on subliminal, outside the pale of consciousness.
You wrote, a patient said, conversely, if the motion is salient enough, an ill-defined conscious percept may be reported akin to waving your hand in front of your eyes when they're closed. So when I'm doing that, there's some visual perception going on?
No, so this is one particular individual who's well-studied, who had a car accident early on in his life that left him blind in part of his right visual field. He has damage in his left visual cortex. And in this part of the visual field, he has a so-called scotoma, and he doesn't see anything. Yet if you ask him, if you move, let's say, on a monitor, a bright dot or a bar or something in one or the other direction, you ask him to guess, he can do it much better than chance. You know, if you say on an average can move equally left to the right, he can do much, much better than chance. And then if you ask him what you see, either he says, well, I don't see anything. Or in this one case, he says, well, it's akin to being in a completely dark room and you wave your hand in front of you. Right, which is sort of a very ghostly, it's certainly very, very different from the way if I see you and you move your hand, there's no ambiguity. I see your hand move. I have this very vivid picture. In his case, the neurons that give rise to this picture, this picture in my head that I have, are destroyed due to his car accident, yet other parts of the brain can still process that information and signal it to his hand so he can indicate it moves to the left or to the right, yet they do not give rise to a conscious sensation.
So if he's getting multiple information, though, that particular patient, he has not as good ability to distinguish?
Exactly. We all get, so it turns out in our day-to-day life when we navigate through the world, so we, for example, just talking about biking. When you bike, you have to see, of course, you have to be highly alert, and it may, many of the cues you use to navigate, you know, very rapidly in car traffic if you're on a bicycle, you may not be conscious aware of them because either because you don't pay attention to them or because your brain just didn't give you access to them yet, conscious access to them, but your body can still exploit them and you can lean in a certain way or abruptly break when you didn't even see something consciously. So it all relates to this ancient mind-body puzzle, this mind-body conundrum. Here you have conscious sensation, yet what this shows, there are other parts of the brain that give rise to visual behavior without giving rise to conscious perception. And it also tells you something about the material basis of consciousness, that consciousness resides in the brain, is of the brain, and if certain parts of the brain are destroyed, then certain aspects of consciousness are gone. Certain content of consciousness will disappear with it.
Dr. Christoph Koch is our guest. He's a brain scientist. You say, if forced to, a blindsight patient might be able to correctly guess whether or not a water bottle was present in the blind field, but he wouldn't use this information to plan how to cross a desert.
Yeah, so this blindsight is also interesting because it tells us something about the function of consciousness. So the way these experiments are done, it's not that the patient sits there and says, oh, I think there's a glass of water there in my blind field. The experiment proceeds by, I'm the experimentalist, and I ask you, is the glass of water on the left or on the right? Or is it full or is it empty? And so the patient is forced to make a choice, and then he or she will much better than chance answer correct. But it's not that this information is freely accessible to him so that he can use it to plan, for example, to take a water bottle if he wants to cross, you know, a desert. So that tells you something, that unconscious behaviors are very important in our daily life because they help mediate the sort of like reflexes. You know, we live in a complex environment. Lots of other things are moving and we have to rapidly orient ourselves to it. And there are a lot of unconscious systems that I call zombie systems that deal with that. But if I really want to think and plan ahead and combine things, and I need water, I need this, I need that, that's what I need consciousness for. That's a function, or one of the functions of consciousness.
So in terms of blindsight, when was it first discovered that this condition exists?
This was first discovered in the 70s by a British neurologist, Larry Weisskranz, who did simultaneously experiments in monkeys where he found this condition, and then he described a patient that had this paradoxical condition. Although the patient claimed she was blind and there was no evidence to doubt that claim, she could still point, when she was asked to, at very bright lights. She could still correctly localize bright lights in her otherwise blind visual field.
Why didn't established science accept this at first?
It was very controversial because people thought, oh, of course she's seeing, maybe she doesn't understand correctly, maybe she's using other cues, maybe the light gets reflected into her eyes. So people had to, systematically, scientists had to rule out all other cues before it got accepted. Now it's widely accepted. Yes, there are many different visual systems in your head, only some of which give rise to a picture in your head, only some of which give rise to conscious visual sensation. Other ones bypass it, yet they still process visual information.
Are there ways to codify how many different kinds of blind sight or damage to that system occurs? Are there different ways to codify how many there are? Is there blind sight? What were the other names you were giving?
Well, yeah, there are different ways of doing it. Well, so agnosia is a beautiful term that's used in the clinic, agnostic. Agnosia comes from Sigmund Freud, and it really means agnosis, absence of knowledge. The original term was a blindness of the soul. When a patient, it's slightly different, when a patient has lost a particular aspect of perception. So, for example, again, the case you described, a painter described by Oliver Sacks, who had a small stroke and then he didn't see the world in color anymore. He only saw it in shapes of gray. Or another, in one case of a patient, the color blindness is only in the upper left visual quadrant. So most of the visual field he sees in color, but in the upper visual field, he doesn't see in color because, again, it tells you there are some neurons that subserve color vision in the upper part of the visual field. And if you lose them, you lose the associated content. So to return to your original question, you can either describe these things sort of using Freudian terms like preconscious or unconscious vision perception, or you can do what we can now do systematically, first in animals and then in humans. We can study the neurological basis and describe how many different visual pathways are there. And there may well be on the order of a dozen, if not more, visual pathway. Some control my pupil, some control my diurnal rhythm, you know, it's controlled by light, some control my eye movements, very fastly controlled, and some control my color vision, some control my visual perception, my motion perception. So it turns out the different channels in my brain that subserve different aspects of vision.
So then given that, what parts of the brain are damaged to cause these conditions?
So in blind sight, typically it tends to, as I mentioned before, it's a rare condition. In the case where it has been studied is the primary visual cortex. So if you touch the back of your head, you can feel there's a bump there. And maybe half an inch above that bump is your primary visual cortex. That's the terminus of all the optical fibers that leave your eye. There are roughly a million fibers and a coax cable that leaves your eye. And by way of an intermediate, they go to the back of the brain. So if you fall backwards onto your occipital head, or if somebody whacks you with a baseball bat, there you'll see stars. You'll see flashes of light. And so we know since 150 years roughly, that's the first part of the visual system. There are many other visual cortical areas. And damage to that part gives rise to this, or can give rise to this, this paradoxical term, blind sight. Okay. I mean, the wonder of it all, that although there are all these different ways the brain processes it, it all comes together into this smooth, beautiful interface. So one way to think about consciousness, it's like an interface. All the real work is hidden, it's underneath that beautiful skin, but it all comes together and it's all integrated. But in fact, if you look at the underlying brain, there's a brain for color, there's a brain for motion, there's a brain for eye movement, yet we are totally unaware of that. We're unconscious of all of that. Is below is below the threshold of consciousness.
Is that what you're talking about, or this area of the brain, is that an older part of the brain? What part of the, what's the age of that area, or what's the
evolution? Well, no, I mean, cortex sort of so cortex, or particularly neocortex, is really the stuff on if our brain is like a walnut, it's really this outer skin, this highly convolved skin. It's roughly, the size of it's roughly like a pizza. It's 14 inches across. It's 2 to 3 millimeters thick, so pretty much like a pizza. You put two of them, the left and the right, and they're all crumbled up, and they're crammed inside your skull. This tissue, I think of it like a tissue, this was first derived by evolution roughly 200 million years ago. And we have it, and dogs have it, and mice have it. It's basically all the same. It's just different animals have different amount of it.
So if this damage happens, or if this problem occurs, can it be corrected?
In the rare case where it's been studied, no. It's typically chronically. It's typically been many years. No, in this case, no. Other form, it depends always on the side of the damage, how big it is, and whether it's bilateral or not. Damage that's on both sides, typically it's much more difficult to correct than if it's a unilateral deficit that often can be compensated for by other parts of the brain.
So I know you've touched on this, but given this condition, how is this evidence for zombie? And what do you mean when you say zombies?
By zombies, I mean brain systems, agents in your brain that mediate your day-to-day behavior very efficiently, but doing it by bypassing consciousness. And it turns out most of the things you do, you're not conscious of. You tie your shoelaces, you bike on traffic, you can be conscious of it, but also you can be distracted and think about something else. And so it turns out the daily pattern of our lives is dictated by many of them. And when you train, like when an athlete trains, or when a special forces soldier trains again and again and again to act quickly without thought, that's exactly when you exploit the zombie system. You essentially train up a zombie that when the rubber hits the road and you have to do something, and there's gunshots flying, you better do it without thinking about it. That's exactly when sort of these other systems take over and you just act out without there being too much consciousness in the action. It's this flow that typically only happens for highly trained things. That's why you have to train whether you're an athlete or a soldier.
All right, but you also wrote here that this experiment proves that we can find out what animals are conscious of. How do you mean? Animals, all higher mammals we're talking?
Well, okay, so you have to give some background. So this is an experiment where people try to replicate, or did successfully replicate in a monkey, this phenomenon of blind sight, where a monkey can essentially tell you by doing proper behavioral experiments, do I see something or do I not see something, but I can still respond to it. In this particular beautiful experiment by Petra Störig and Alan Cowie in Oxford, that she showed in these monkeys, that the monkeys can tell her, now I'm seeing something, now I'm not seeing something, but I can still respond appropriately, which is what blindsight is. The patient says, I don't see it. Yet to his own surprise, he keeps on guessing correctly.
To his own surprise.
To his own surprise, yeah, because he said, I don't see anything. And when I don't see anything, I'm assuming, well, obviously I don't have access to that. But one part of my brain does have access to it. Now immediately, zombie vision is simple. This type of vision, for example, it wouldn't allow you to read a newspaper. But it's enough to navigate. There's a beautiful case of a patient who's blind. He has two strokes, consecutive strokes, 2 months apart in the tube that destroy both sides of his visual cortex. He's blind. He has a walking stick. If you go to optometry, his visual test is totally blind. Yet he can still navigate through a hallway filled with cluttered objects, because some other part of the brain takes the information, probably using a subcortical route, and helps guide his legs.
Hmm. That's wild.
The brain is a wild thing, man.